It is time for the week that was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. And joining me in the studio this morning, Territory Alliance leader Terry Mills. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
We've got Matt Cunningham from Sky News. Good morning, Matt.
I've just been reading this story this morning about how people, about the dangers of teenagers being addicted to screens. And then as I look around, and here we are, all of us, grown adults, just sitting there
looking
like,
at our phones. It happens.
Everyone's in the middle.
Gary Higgins, the Deputy Opposition Leader. Good morning.
Morning, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, very well. And we've got Natasha Files, the Attorney General and Health Minister.
Morning, Wolfie.
And, well, it's always a busy week. There's no doubt about that. But unfortunately, yesterday we did learn that the Northern Territory has recorded its first coronavirus case in nearly 3 months after a Territorian returning home via Melbourne tested positive for COVID-19. Now, we know that this man is a Darwin local in his 30s. He'd flown in on an international flight from Pakistan and spent 14 days in hotel quarantine in Melbourne. But it, I guess, just shows that there is still that vulnerability in the Northern Territory or all around Australia at this point in time that that COVID is still here and it's not going to be going away for some time yet.
So, Katie, there is no vaccine, and even when a vaccine is developed, if a vaccine is developed, it will take time to roll that out and get that across the population. So Territorians need to be prepared that they will see more cases. This case is not community transmission, as you've just read out those details. It was imported, but it's really important that Territorians keep those principles of the physical distancing, the hygiene, and if you're not feeling well, and just we will keep testing, we will keep those measures in place. And the coronavirus is evolving, as Hugh Heggie was saying yesterday. Health professionals, clinicians are learning more about the virus, and so we'll continue to listen to them.
I was just going to say, it was imported from Melbourne by the looks of things.
Yeah.
I mean, is the government now looking at doing what's happened in South Australia and Queensland and closing the borders to Victoria?
So the local government areas that are being declared hotspots, that's out of AHPPC. So right now we have said that on the 17th the border restrictions will change, and people have been talking about the borders opening. The borders aren't just suddenly opening. There'll still be police and those resources on the borders. People are still filling the paperwork.
For and 2 weeks, right?
Well, at this stage we're leaving that in for another replication cycle, but this is why we, you know, the CLP and Terry said to open the borders immediately a few weeks ago. That's why we said we need to wait the replication cycles, and that's really important for people to understand. In terms of the borders, so they open on the 17th, we'll keep those resources there at least for one replication cycle, and then we'll be assessing. But coming back to the point of your question, Matt, those local government areas, and listening to Hugh yesterday, these are really defined outbreaks. They've got them defined down to suburbs, but we'll continue listening to AHPPC. They declare the hotspots, and then people coming in from those have to quarantine.
There's that photo in the paper today of people who are at the airport, and you can see how close they are together. My query about the whole hotspot thing is, what stops someone who's from a hotspot? So someone from a hotspot gets on that plane and comes here, so they have to quarantine, but between the time that they leave Melbourne and get to their quarantine up here in Darwin, they've been in close contact with people on the plane. We determined yesterday that there's no social distancing in place on the planes. Then they're in close contact at the airport, as you can see like that. Aren't we running the risk, a big risk, that they can bring the virus, spread it to other people who go straight out into the community?
And that's why we have to be aware that there is still coronavirus in Australia. There isn't a vaccine. In terms of those measures, people in those hotspots are not meant to leave their home unless it's for those essential things. But
that's the thing. Then they're in really close contact with all these other people who go straight out into the community.
I think the worry, and that's something that's been raised with us on a few occasions, certainly on the text line and the phone line. It's been people questioning, you know, when they are in an Uber or when they are in a taxi or when they are in the, you know, on the plane, and they're sort of really close to other people. And I know that I'd asked you about this yesterday, Filesy. And it's, I guess that's the big worry, because like we've said right from the start, is it only takes one person to, you know, to spread the virus, and then we're in a situation where all of a sudden the Northern Territory's gone from, you know, eradicating it to having plenty of people here who've got coronavirus.
And Katie, as we said, in terms of the clinical definition of eradication, that was not what we aimed for. Suppression is the strategy around this, so reducing that risk. And it's a real balance, because we've got some people are saying, oh, this is all, you know, we just need to open the borders and get on with life. And you've got other people that are saying we all shouldn't leave the house. And so we'll continue to listen to that clinical advice. The measures will continue to change, because that will be based off, and, you know, this is a virus that 6 months ago, none of us had even heard of the name of it. And
I spoke to John Patterson from AmSant earlier in the week, and we are trying to catch up with Marion Scrimgeour today from the Northern Land Council to speak a bit further about this. So I know that Am Santa certainly said, is there a possibility here that we could either hold off for a further 2 weeks opening those borders? Now, I'm not sure that I entirely agree with that. I know that business is doing it so tough, and there are different states that are, you know, doing really well in terms of battling COVID. But they also said, you know, that could we also then look at closing off to Victoria? Now, I know you've explained, Minister, that obviously we're going with the hotspot situation, and I understand the reasoning for that. But then the other suggestion has been, and I think this is actually really sound, is that those that do come from one of those hotspots, they don't just go into self-quarantine, they go into mandatory quarantine for 2 weeks. And I actually think that that's a really reasonable sort of outcome here. If you do have people arriving from those hotspots, should they be in that, should they actually be in that forced quarantine so that then... you know, we're able to make sure that we're not seeing further spread.
Katie, and this is why when we said that we will open the borders, ease those restrictions into to the newer normal on the 17th of July, we needed those two replication cycles to see what's happened, and we've seen what's happened. So we will be in regular contact with the Chief Health Officer and the professionals that support him. The Chief Minister and I will get briefed again next week, and we'll make the decisions based on that clinical advice, building in all these factors to keep Territorians safe.
The other thing that the government... When you announced those measures towards opening the borders, you guys said that you were watching the situation, particularly in Victoria, following the Black Lives Matter protest, and to see whether there was community transmission before you made that decision. Given it's clear that now there is community transmission again in Victoria, does that mean that the government goes back to looking at closing the borders to Victoria?
It's really interesting, Matt. So what we saw was those mass gatherings, and we know that there was at least two people that I've been made aware of that were at those rallies that had tested positive to COVID-19 in the days following. We didn't see transmission from that. These transmission cases are really close family groups. They've identified them into suburbs. And I know that one family, it's extended family, that there's 18 members that have COVID-19, another family have 20. So it really shows you how this virus spreads, and that's why AHPPC have recommended the local government areas as the definition of hotspot. And I just think it's important, Katie, I said this yesterday, but when you look at perhaps Queensland, a large geographical area, you've got Cairns, Townsville, Rockhampton, Brisbane, they're vastly spread out. And so if you were to see an outbreak in Rockhampton, for example, you know, shutting down that travel to the whole state. So at the moment, Victoria is a smaller geographical area. And so I think that we'll just continue listening to the professionals and making those decisions.
Yeah, can I just check on what you've just said there? It's like it wasn't, you almost said that it wasn't from the mass gatherings around Black Lives Matters. It just popped up miraculously in families.
How no, Terry, that's not what I said. But no, if we were under you, the borders would be open and we would have a free flow of people potentially bringing COVID-19. That's what you guys said. You said open the borders weeks ago.
The borders are actually open. It's just a modification of the controls around those borders in a sensible way.
So would you remove those modifications? Because that's what you were saying a few weeks ago.
Alter the modifications. The protocols need to be put in place so that we can manage this well and get the balance right.
So what would be your protocols?
I'm asking you something else.
But I'm asking what your protocols would be.
Yeah, but I started this. I'm saying that you... I just was a bit puzzled when you said that these occurrences of community transmission sort of appeared in families. How did it get to the family?
I think that's well documented, Terry, and Territorians need to understand the point of difference, because we're coming up to the election and you could be the Chief Minister in just a few months' time. What would you do? You just said that you would remove modifications. What does that mean?
Alter the modification, get the protocols right between the states that are managing this well.
In more detail, what does that mean?
Exactly as I said, that you need to understand this and provide the capacity for states that have got a good system in place to develop the protocols to be able to manage it properly. And I see that what's happened now, as you've already said, the way that this was responded to well, followed all the protocols. Maybe there needs to be an adjustment.
I think, Katie, the concern that's been expressed by the Land Council, and I know the Central Land Council, yep. Barb Shaw, I think, came out, and I think Joe the week before has said they've got concerns, and there's a completely different situation in the Indigenous communities, and that's because of the overcrowding. And I know that government has said they've got special plans in place for it happening there, but there is an option even to consider whether you reintroduce those biosecurity areas so that, you know, you can give them some assurance. But I think, you know, it'd be interesting. I can't speak for the Land Council at all. I know that the constituents that I've got, you know, more so like daily, but when you get further out towards Wattai, where you've got 20 people in a house, they are still really concerned about it. not because of this Victorian incident.
No.
This is before that. And
it's if it gets out there. Yeah. It's the real worry in terms of that spread.
And a lot of them, you know, sort of how we've got the postcodes being used in Victoria, in the territory here, you know, we've used the Biosecurity Act, which is the Commonwealth, and they're the ones that would have to be used to implement that.
But it does demonstrate that it's a really difficult juggle, and I think that, you know, we've all known that right from the word go, but we've got, you know, we've got a situation where you've got business that's struggling, you've got a lot of businesses, you know, that are really doing it tough because they do not have those visitors coming from other states and territories, but then you've obviously got this, I know they're hesitant to call it a second wave in Melbourne, but they've certainly got a situation in Melbourne that they appear to be struggling to contain to some degree. And now we've got one person that's come back to the Northern Territory with COVID-19. And those questions do remain, you know, just wanting to make sure that we're not in a situation in the Northern Territory, as we'd said right from the word go, you know, that we don't end up with it spreading out to our remote Indigenous communities. We all understand that we've got a very vulnerable, situation in the territory where we have got people living in overcrowded houses, and if we had coronavirus spread out to one of those remote communities, it would be absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I just came back from Santa Teresa, and they are really, really concerned out there.
But under you, just the borders would be open now. There'd be no measures in place.
Just an observation of the Alice Springs community, you know, there are two things happening, and that is, you know, the economic challenges that they're facing. Tourism is obviously something that would give them a kickstart, but it's almost not possible to even imagine how that could be restarted. But I did notice in the Alice Springs community, their adherence to social distancing, the washing of the hands, the touching of the elbows seemed to be more prevalent there than it is up here. Yeah. We seem to be more relaxed here. But I take Gary's point that there is actually concern about this, and that's why there needs to be clarity around how we respond to it and understand it and manage that risk well.
Given those concerns, Terry, does your party still support opening the borders as soon as possible?
No, certainly, but it's not, you know, as it would be amplified to say, it's just open them up with no measures in place. Always said at that point in time there hadn't been any new cases, that we needed to establish the protocols to allow those from places where it is under control to be able to develop plans to come to the Northern Territory and manage it well. And then from there, if something does occur, as has arisen, then we assess that and respond accordingly. We just needed the protocols in place and be get ahead of the game so people can begin to plan.
I'm confused, Terry. What are these protocols that you're talking about that are different from what we've got in now? Just a few weeks ago, you were saying open the borders.
I thought we could have started that earlier rather than later.
Do you think, Falsey, are we in a situation here where realistically we do need to look at, if people are arriving from those hotspots, we make them go into mandatory quarantine?
Katie, and just before I answer that question, it was Robin that said last week in Parliament that the border closures were unnecessary. So one of your own party members, that was what she clearly stated in the Parliament last week. So I just think that, you know, you really need to clarify for Territorians your point of view. In terms of the measures, Katie, people need to understand that this is adjusting to, you know, the word new normal is thrown around, but the change of restrictions on the 17th is based on what is happening, and those measures may change from there depending on what we see. But without having a vaccine, it's not going to be travel like we knew it before. People have to be prepared if they go away that those local government areas, those hotspots, can change, and they can change rapidly.
Yeah, well, I've noticed you're getting little texts there from the fifth floor, say, ask him this and ask him that. The thing is that South Australia adjusted their position, and we thought that it would be useful for us to respond in a similarly confident manner. But when circumstances change, you can adjust it. I mean, we've got to be able to lead in a way that responds to the underlying economic challenges that we're facing as well.
So it's another flip-flop policy from Territory Alliance. When it suits you, the border measures are unnecessary, but all of a sudden when we see one case,
you can make adjustments. You can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Pretty sure it's called flip-flop policy.
360's The Week. it was for BTC Constructions.
It is just on 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. It is Friday morning. It is the week that was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. And this morning I have got Terry Mills, Matt Cunningham, Gary Higgins and Natasha Files in the studio with me. Now, throughout the week, there's obviously once again been discussion about fracking. And we did catch up with Andrew Liveris yesterday, the co-chair of the Territory's Economic Reconstruction Commission. And we did actually talk about quite a range of things, from renewables to the gas industry. But obviously the headline has been, and it was yesterday, as we know, in the front page of the paper as well, about the fact that he believes our gas opportunity really is quite abundant. He said, I can count maybe half a dozen places on Earth that have had the opportunity that the Beetaloo Gas Basin can potentially bring to the Northern Territory. Now, I think that it's safe to say that the Economic Reconstruction Commission are not just looking at gas. And Gary, you are obviously on that commission. There's a number of different things that are being looked at, and it is about diversifying the economy, isn't it?
Yeah, look, that's right, Katie. And gas is one of the ones that is being looked at. But, of course, we're also looking at renewables.
Yep.
You know, we're looking at the potential in the area of agriculture. And there's also the issue around Indigenous participation, not just because of the workforce, but also because of the land. But one of the key things is that, you know, it's open at the moment for Territorians to give suggestions. And people shouldn't think that, you know, any suggestion is not worth looking at. Every suggestion is worth looking at. It's a shame that the argument is simply around gas, and gas has got, you know, a whole stack of different potential. The thing is, when you look at it, a lot of people just look at it as energy producing, but that's a very small part of it. The potential there to, you know, downstream manufacturing and the jobs that creates are phenomenal. And it's the same with even when you get into agriculture. You know, the thing is, it's not just growing product, it's actually, can you value add? You know, we dump a lot of mangoes, you know. Why aren't they either frozen or canned? We import canned mangoes, you know. And I'm not saying that's a suggestion, and it's nothing that's been put forward, but there's an option there.
Well, and I guess whether intentionally or unintentionally, the fracking debate has come back up again. Terry, courtesy of you. But I did put to Andrew Liveris yesterday, and I was very cautious. I didn't want to make it a political thing, so I didn't name you or name the political party, but I did say that there was, and I read from the press release, there was a political party in the Northern Territory saying that they'd be locking the gate on fracking in the NT, and they say, from your press release, that it's important to note that the economics do not support the industry moving forward, and with no viable industry going forward, that global investors are marking fracking jurisdictions down as increased sovereign risk. Now, I asked him whether, in his experience, that was the case, and he said, no, absolutely not.
Did he? Well, we're saying that there will be no more.
But that's not what Jeff Collins said yesterday. He Facebooked and said, second, our proposal is not an outright ban.
I think, Wolfie, we should all put our phones in the middle, because I don't think it's fair that one person gets a heap of information fed to them. Fed to them by taxpayer-funded staff on the fifth floor. I just don't think that's fair. If we're going, like, we're going into an election, it's not fair if one person has an advantage over the other.
We want to play a fair race.
I did my research.
Yeah, just a moment ago.
But, Terry, it has become a real political issue again.
Yeah. Look, of course it's become a real political issue. And the Labor Party, that's the last thing they wanted was for the community to begin to consider fracking again, because it is a problem for the Labor Party. And poor old CLP, they've nested on it. The issue is that the question about hydraulic fracturing is not a question about whether it's safe or unsafe. It's just that the Territory has always put itself in a position of hoping in this next big project. And the very things that Andrew Liveris, whom I know and respect, spoke about, 95% of his commentary was exactly what Gary was saying, diversifying our economy and taking the pathway to renewables seriously. What I'm concerned about is if we focus on this thing over the horizon that's got some question marks over it for a number of reasons, we then draw our attention away from the very real opportunities right under our
nose. Terry, that is not what you'd been arguing last week. That isn't what you were saying last last week. You'd spoken about the environmental concerns and you'd also spoken about it not being economically viable. But is it government's role here when there's already been a report done and there's already been, you know, the decision has been made that they're going to move forward following on from that report? Is it government's role, or whoever steps into government, is it your role to tell an industry whether it is or isn't economically viable for them to do business in the Northern Territory?
Well, why then would the Labor government put $100 million into something that is economically viable?
So in terms of fracking, Katie, it is an issue that concerns Territorians. They've got a number of questions around. We have done what we said we would do. We held an independent scientific inquiry. There is 135 recommendations outlined. We are working on implementing those.
Yeah.
It is a cost recovery model, so industry will pay back what it costs to put in place those measures. What Territory Alliance have done is they've flip-flopped for cheap political gain. They are not caring about protecting the environment. Terry Mills, when he was a chief minister, scrapped the climate change unit. We're on track with renewables. It will be 16% renewable in the Northern Territory by the end of this year. So what industry needs, what Territorians need, is consistent, steady, stable government where they know the rules and they're not flip-flopping and changing every 4 years.
Well, let's go back to the recommendations, the Pepper Inquiry. If they were serious about that, there are aspects of those recommendations that have been fudged, and the community are onto it.
So in you terms don't of support the 135 recommendations?
Of course
what?
We do.
So
absolutely.
What's been fudged?
Particularly around the storage of water and also about the securing of baseline data to make sure this is absolutely secure and we understand exactly what impact this has.
So is there evidence to support that that's been fudged?
Yes.
What is the evidence to support?
There are many who are watching this, and I've asked the minister during the second last sittings. I said, tell me how you are going from exploration to production. What are the mechanisms you have in place to inform your decision to go from exploration to production? He could not describe what the mechanisms were. He goes straight to production. The Pepper Inquiry speaks about making sure that you establish the baseline data so you have an informed decision to go to production.
And so
that's
you're
very
saying
unclear.
They do not have that baseline data?
Unclear.
Natasha,
unclear.
Is that the case? Is there baseline data?
So, Katie, there is 135 recommendations that have been independently, that report was handed down. If those 135 recommendations are all put in place, it shows that you can mitigate the risk.
You better go and have a look.
We're committed to the 135. Where's your position? You're
absolutely
saying 1 minute that you ban
totally
it, then
committed.
You flip-flop and
totally
say, oh, hang
committed
on a second, it's
water
not an outright
protection,
ban.
Baseline data
you're
to inform your decision around production.
You're just going for what's politically popular, and it is incredibly frustrating,
well,
Katie, because the environment is being used as a divisive issue instead of providing that stability, which is what industry needs, and making sure we protect the environment. We are a government that has done more for the environment than any other government. Well, we have got measures in place right across, focusing on renewables, addressing climate change, things that when you were Chief Minister, you scrapped the Office of Climate Change. You wouldn't even let the word be said.
Tremendous slogans. Great slogans. The Utilities Commissioner does not agree with you. You say all the things that that people like to hear, but you don't do it.
Do you believe in climate change, Sherry? Why did you scrap the Office of Climate Change when you were Chief Minister?
Determining the regulatory framework to allow renewables to get into the grid was the real work of government, and you haven't done it. You just say things, but you don't attend to the real work of government. When we're talking about diversifying the economy, you can say that, but you don't attend to the actual mechanisms. That's why the mining sector has stalled, while people are walking away from the territory, while you put your hope in something that's just over the horizon, and you don't attend to the business at hand.
Derek, can I ask, when we talk about diversifying the economy, if gas isn't part of the Northern Territory's future, for Territory Alliance, what industries are?
It's hidden in plain view. I was in Alice Springs, and there's a photograph up there of all the great mining potential within that region. Every one of them's got an F on it, says that they're feasible. They have been feasible forever. There is serious investment going into the mining sector, and it's not making any progress.
Some people may be listening to that and find that quite an interesting thing to note, that you do still believe that mining is the future, but only certain types of mining.
The issue is, how do we actually realistically diversify the economy? We believe that there are some grave reservations about the viability as the big projects that's going to deliver us being hydraulic fracturing, but there are plenty of opportunities right under our nose that we need to get to work on.
If you want to diversify the economy, why would you take out one of the key potential opportunities, just rule it straight out?
because we believe that it's a project that another big project is going to be questionable when we get there. And I think we need to put the attention of government on the things that we can actually turn
but
to.
You're not talking about the attention of government. You're just you're talking about straight out banning it outright.
Because
what won't happen?
Well, I tell you what, I think the Labor Party are a bit conflicted on this, and they're saying they're just chasing you.
Well,
just
they are, hang but on, this is about territory alliance, not the Labor Party.
No, but I'm explaining something. You say, you know, you throw this thing out there, you say you're just chasing what's popular. You in this business, you actually have to make sure that you also have the support of your community, and you've got to be able to lead with the authority of your broader community. And I don't believe, in Territory Alliance, our membership does not support this, the hydraulic fracturing as an industry going forward. We believe it's questionable.
So is that why we saw a change in the policy from your membership?
Well, I'm now the leader of Territory Alliance.
So, Terry, was there a vote on it?
Every one of our candidates is of the same
view. Was there a vote on it with Territory Alliance?
Yes, there was.
With the whole party?
All canvas some time ago.
So yeah, but when you changed the decision, was there the decision to change your policy to support a ban on fracking, was that put to the members of Territory Alliance?
Yes. To the candidates, absolutely.
No, but to the broader membership.
We already had established a view from the membership.
What was that view?
That the majority do not support hydraulic fracturing.
Look, I'm really glad I wore my flip-flops today, Katie, but look, can I just add something to this debate? And the issue here, of course, is that, you know, the Reconstruction Commission is looking at every option, as I said before. And one of the things around the gas industry, of course, is, and when you look at the Beetaloo Basin, and I don't know whether Andrew said it yesterday, but that needs to be proved up. There's a lot of potential there. At the moment, there's, I think, 3 wells have gone down, which are showing a lot of potential. But for industry, they need anything up to about 20 wells to be done before they can actually commit to it. And I think it's totally irresponsible for any political party to not allow that option to go ahead. Full stop. The thing is that it is a massive potential for the economy. It's got massive potential with manufacturing downstream. How you can make a decision when private sector money is what we need to get the territory going, how you can actually say we're going to ban one of those industries is, to me, just totally irresponsible.
We've said
on
that
the
there
part
will be
of
no
the
more.
Territorians.
Those who have current exploration permits can proceed according to those permits. There'll be no more.
So does that mean the whole of the Beetaloo Basin, Terry?
For those that are currently in play, can continue. We're not going to.
Continue to the point
sure,
of fracking.
Sure, it's not a ban. If they've got a legitimate license to explore,
but didn't
they
you
can.
Say that you will not then renew those licences? So when, all they'll be able to do is explore.
When we get to that juncture, and we determine the conditions within that exploration lease.
That's a big if, Terry.
Of course.
Oh, I'm really glad I wore my flip-flops today, hey, because it sends a real clear message.
I just think that this is being used as a political tool. I feel as though we're, you know, it doesn't send a clear message to industry, and I'm actually a bit surprised, Terry, from you.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. When you have a good look at the territory and you have a Reconstruction Commission talking about how we're going to go forward, and it's like, I think I'm very worried about the territory community being forced to put its attention on one small sector that is questionable, and we've got an enormous amount of real opportunity.
But my question is, why rule one sector out? I mean, that what you're saying makes about as much sense as if we came out tomorrow and said, oh, let's rule out renewable energy altogether because we think it's a furphy.
It's specifically hydraulic fracturing. It's not gas. We have no drama at all
but
with gas.
But do you see how then that is what makes it come across as if it's such a political decision rather than being one that's about industry, the Northern Territory, or the environment?
When you say it's a political decision,
like it's one that you think's going to win your votes.
Oh, hang on. That's a bit of a cynical thing to say. When you say it's just to win votes, you know, if you're going to trade in this business called democracy, you've got to have community support. And I would think that if any of the other parties did a genuine read of what their community's view on this, they'd have to take that seriously. As not only the pure politics of it, the community have an informed view. There is also a growing view of questionability about whether $100 million spent on something that the community doesn't broadly support and whether the economics of it, in fact, stack up.
It's a really big statement to say that the whole community doesn't support it.
I didn't say
it.
The whole... Broadly, all of our candidates have been knocking on doors. I've just come back from Central Australia. Karma... had a booking from the Chief Minister. He said he was going to go in there and talk on Karma Radio. Massive listening audience. He pulled out at the last moment. Why? Because they'd be talking about fracking and he didn't want to talk about that. The community are really concerned about this. Make no mistake.
I think there's a valid point there. And Tash, is that true? Every Labor person I speak to says that there are basically two issues that come up on the doors at the moment. One of them is borders. And the other one is fracking. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think that what's happened with the issue of fracking is it's become quite divisive across our community, and people, you know, it's certainly a point of discussion. But when you get into a conversation with people and you talk about renewables, lifting that from 2.6% up to 16%, you know, the Environment Act that we've done, and Terry's talking about some of these measures that are in place off the back of the Pepper inquiry, but they support industry and even renewables and solar projects, you know, that some of the measures that need to be put in place to protect the environment.
Are they concerned about the Utility Commissioner's report last week that says that even at 16% where we're at the moment, our grid is in danger of falling over?
And that is a point in terms of having a sustainable electricity, the processes going forward, having that grid and that generation and making sure that it is...
And what's it going to cost to get the grid to the point where it can handle the 50% renewable energy that we want to put into it?
And I don't have the answer to that in front of me, but what I can say is people are sick of, and we've thrown the word around today, but flip-flopping, they want to see plans in place and they want to see stability around that. And so we can't afford to have what we saw happen in 2012 is that renewables, climate change, you couldn't talk about those things. It was thrown out the door. We've gotten into government, done a lot of work. People just, and business need that certainty. They want to come
and
invest.
They do want to see those plans in place, which is why it seems odd to me that the government promised to do a review on the feed-in tariff and make it public. They didn't do it, and then overnight they just scrapped it. Then they spent $30 million on a battery that was unfunded. Where is the plan to implement the 50% renewable energy target? Because at the moment there doesn't appear to be one, and the Utility Commissioner seems to be incredibly concerned about the direction we're heading in at the moment.
In terms of electricity generation in the Territory, it's incredibly complex, and we are at a pivotal point where we need to make sure that we have the infrastructure that lets us step away from the diesel turbines and the gas through to renewables, and it's a huge amount of work that Dale Wakeford's been leading.
Well, it is also very expensive to get the system to the point where it's able to handle that solar feeding.
You see the Facebook posts and they say renewable energy is cleaner and cheaper.
Well, I think the thing is, it's because we need to know how much it costs. And this is, I guess, my argument. Everybody wants to go renewable. There is no doubt about that. You know, I am somebody who's environmentally conscious, maybe not to the degree that I could be. But this is where it really annoys me at different times when it becomes such a political debate rather than being about how much, you know, what we've actually got in terms of infrastructure, what we're able to support. You know, we talk about, okay, ideologically, we do not want gas. That may be the case, but is the system up to a point where we're able to go?
No, it's
50-50 renewables.
It's going to take about
at least
2 years and a serious government to attend to the regulatory changes to allow a new energy source to feed into an old system.
And Terry, no one would trust you to deliver that because
every party needs to answer is how much is that going to cost? What needs to be done and what is the cost? That's what no one will tell you. It's like, 50% renewables by 2030. No one will tell you what needs to be done and what it's going to cost.
I've asked this question before of Dale Wakefield. I've put it to her before because I've been told by sources.
That's why she can't answer the question.
I had a briefing from the unit down in Alice Springs yesterday and I don't think they could answer it either. However, it's clear that we can't afford to be in this nexus between an old system that requires regulatory reform and understanding the impediments to get into a new system.
So does Territory Alliance support 50% renewable energy by 2030?
We have said 30, and the reason for 30 is to... You know, if we get to 50, fine, we've under-promised and over-delivered. But I think that is definitely the way it's going. You just look at the trend, the cost. Well, I say the world money market is moving in the direction of renewables. You have to recognise that.
But it's also causing issues. I mean, even in California, they're having to load shed and basically give their energy away to Arizona because they've got too much renewable energy. There are all of these issues.
Absolutely.
And we're and even though we know all of this stuff, we're creating all of these issues for our here by pursuing a target that seems to have been, that the research behind that target seems to have been to pluck two numbers out of the air.
Yeah, it does appear to me that you know we're at a point of change, you know, and it's a shift globally, and we're at the point of no return, and we really have to know how we're going to take those next steps. And the unit down there in Alice Springs here at the Desert Knowledge Centre, I think they would be worth talking to and explain. They explained quite well the technical impediments that we have to overcome and the regulatory challenges that haven't been attended to.
Now, I know we said no phones, but I have got a text from a listener.
Have yours,
and the text message says, Gary, go wash your mouth out with soap, please, or every good Territorian knows they're thongs, not flip-flops.
The joke doesn't work, though, does it?
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
I've got the crew in here with me. Now, Matt Cunningham, you've got an interesting story in the paper today about preferences. The Country Liberal Party could preference Territory Alliance below Labor at the August election after Territory Alliance, Terry Mills' new party, announced it would ban fracking. Talk us through this one, mate.
Oh, well, maybe Terry needs to talk us through this one. I don't know. There's definitely a view within the CLP at the moment, I think, Katie, that perhaps Territory Alliance should be put below Labor on their how to vote cards. We certainly saw them do this at the Johnston by-election. I think the thing that probably would be good to ask Terry is whether the CLP say they've tried to do preference deals with you and you just haven't been willing to come to the table.
That's not true.
Have they made any approaches to you?
What do you mean, in recent times?
Both before the Johnston by-election and since the Johnston by-election.
Oh, well, look, we did preference CLP higher than Labor.
Lower than the Greens?
Lower than the Greens, and there was a good reason for that. The good reason that CLP had to preference Labor second is a harder one for them to explain. Since then, you know, I've even had an article in the paper where I said, you know, of course, the issue here is where I think the community's turned against the Labor government. So our preferencing will make sure that there is a replacement.
So will you be preferencing the CLP ahead of Labor then?
Those are questions that will be answered closer to the game.
In the fullness of time, Terry.
I asked this question at one of the Meet the Candidate forums. We asked the question yesterday. A member of the audience had asked the question, and then we asked last week as well to one of the candidates, Gary Strachan, for the seat of Port Darwin, and he had said that it was a matter for each individual candidate to decide how they'd be preferencing.
It's case by case. I mean, it's easy when it was like CLP and Labor for everyone. Now, like, Territory Alliance is a bit like Uber, has disrupted everything, so it's going to be seat by seat, case by case. With an objective.
Your objective is just to be a disruptor. You don't actually care about good policy in government.
Shouldn't it be based on a principle? I mean, I've heard conservatives say, oh, anyone but Labor. Like, if your principle is you think that Labor's a bad government and you want to get...
There'd be good reasons for that. I mean,
why would you preference Labor ahead of the CLP?
Yeah, I think we're sort of losing sight of what this project's about. It's making sure you understand your own community. What is the nature and of a good government, and do you have maximum community support for your position?
So, will you be putting? Given that you said that the community's feedback on fracking, for instance, is that they don't support it, and that the Greens support a ban on fracking as you do. Do you think that the Greens will be ahead of Labor and CLP?
I think this is a moment of madness because we're all talking about fracking. There's more to this story, more to this story to be unfolded before August the 22nd. So let's not frame all of our thinking on the current topic, which is a troubling one for Labor.
Well, the only reason I say that is that the CLP, when I've spoken to people in the CLP, including the President Ron Kelly, his view has been, we're going to have a lot of difficulty preferencing a party that supports a policy that we see as anti-development and anti-jobs. Yeah, well, their whole ethos is to grow the economy and support jobs.
Well, they're actually used, I think that's probably premature to make such a call, but I think behind that comment from Mr. Kelly is also a challenge with Territory Alliance and why it exists. There's more to be told in this story yet, so I think we're getting ahead of ourselves, but it's clear that this reinforces that notion that the CLP and the ALP are one and the same thing. And that's why Territory Alliance come into existence, to show that there needs to be a viable alternative to the establishment that we've had in place for the last 20 years.
And just to clarify something else you said, just to go back before the Johnston by-election, did the CLP come to you and try to do a preference deal? Because they say they did, and you rejected that offer in favour of a deal with the Greens.
No, it wasn't a deal with the Greens. We've explained again, let's just say 100 times we've explained this. There was a conversation. There were conversations. We made our decision. They made theirs.
And what did you base your decision on?
Obviously,
to put the Greens ahead of the CLP.
Because we are the alternative. There needed to be a change from CLP and ALP. We knew that they were the challenge technically. Everyone, you have to preference, you have to put numbers in every box. We needed the support of the minor parties to ensure that we were in play, and that's simply what we did. We put Labor last and CLP second last on the basis that we were the alternative.
For political reasons, you needed the support.
Of course, that's how preferencing works. That's how preferencing works. That's how preferencing works.
You folks are trying to read too much into it. To do a deal with you guys, re-preferences at the moment.
You're talking about deals. I mean, the conversations have been.
Are they still trying to talk to you about it?
Sure, and I'm talking back. I mean, but I'm saying simply.
And what are you saying when you're talking back?
We'll talk about this as we get closer to it. I mean, there's a bit more play in it.
I do think voters want to know. I think there are voters out there who want to know. What is Territory Alliance? Is it a right of centre party or is it a left of centre party?
Yeah, I know. It's really challenging. It's really challenging.
It's challenging because it's challenging, Terry. Like, it's challenging when you hire a guy who wants a royal commission into whether climate change is a hoax, and then you come out and you have a policy to ban fracking. That confuses people.
I think what I've heard or what I've found since Territory Alliance was created is, to begin with, I think people sort of thought, wow, we've got something a bit different in terms of we've got a conservative person who's got views that are similar to some in the community, and they felt like that had maybe been an area where there had been a bit of a lack of representation, even though obviously the CLP's there, but with only two members in opposition. But now I think you've, with a lot of those people now, they're kind of going, well, hang on a second, I'm not really sure what type of party it is, because there's then things that they're doing which go against that.
I think people are reading way too much into a decision around hydraulic fracturing. That's quite a pragmatic decision that can be easily explained if anyone wants to calm down and have a look at it. It's about the proper diversification of the Northern Territory economy. It's about a focus on renewables in a sensible way. When it comes to our law and order responses, you'll find that the community understands and supports our position. We're in a position to explain our response to the real needs of the Territory community, and to try and fix one issue, hydraulic fracturing, to flavour your whole judgment on this, I think is a bit low-resolution thinking.
Have you made that decision so that you can do a deal with the Greens? Because that's what some people are thinking has happened.
Of course some people are thinking all sorts of things, and I can't account for what people think. But I tell you what, we make these decisions with the support of a membership, with the support of candidates who are connected to their local communities, and what we're saying makes sense to them.
Have you received any donations from Lock the Gate or any of the environment movement?
No.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
And that that is just about it for us this morning. I was hoping to talk about, Matt, this other story that you'd written in the paper today about there being an ALP fundraiser and senior executives from the gas company Santos left fuming after its representative was told she wasn't welcome at the $2,500 a head Labor Party fundraiser hosted by the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner. It is a very interesting story and quite crazy.
Katie, all I would say is that it shows that there's still a bit of division, because the reason that Catherine Tillmouth is told that she wasn't welcome at the fundraiser, I suspect, is because she's a former advisor and friend of Ken Vowles. And it just shows, I mean, if the Labor Party needs an example of what division does to a political party, they only need to look at what's happened on the other side of politics. And I just find it amazing that these sorts of divisions are still being pursued by people within the Labor Party.
She's a good chick for what it's worth. Yeah, she's a good person.
she is, but yep. Clearly there are some people up there on the fifth floor who do not like her. So anyway, it's caused a bit of a ruckus with Santos. And as someone pointed out to me, Labor might be playing with fire there, because Santos donates $100,000 to the Darwin Festival every year. So,
I guess at the end of the day, you think it shouldn't matter where somebody's worked before. It shouldn't matter really what they, you know, whatever, what their background is. If you want to go to an event, no matter whether it's a fundraiser or what it is.
Especially if you're coughing up $2,500 and you're a member of the Labor Party.
Yeah. Exactly. So, unbelievable.
Money doesn't buy happiness,
clearly.
Or love. All right, we better wrap up for the morning. Terry Mills, the leader of Territory Alliance, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Katie.
Matt Cunningham from Sky News, thank you for joining us this morning. Thanks, Matt.
Oh, thanks, Whoopi. I got my phone back and I've been inundated with text messages. I didn't know all these things I could have said. Sorry
Gary
to all the people.
Higgins, thank you for joining us in your casual Friday attire.
Yeah, look, not a problem, Katie. It was a pleasure coming in. A pity I couldn't get in more words, but anyway.
Thank you, Gary. And Natasha Files, the Attorney General, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Wolfie.
You're listening to Mix.